Guess what, guys? I'm not a doctor. So if you're going to be making any major medical decisions, please consult your doctor. That includes diets, exercise, medications, and surgery. I love you guys, and be careful and consult your doctor.
Welcome back to Our Sleep Life podcast. And today we have a new type of surgery that's coming your way. It's starting to make the market and starting to get some rumors about it. And of course, your girl wants to have all the information from the resource themselves. So welcome on Dr. Dhingra to the Our Sleep Life podcast.
Thanks, Mel. Thanks for having me this evening. It is a real pleasure and fortunate opportunity for me to join you and to talk about this new procedure.
Yeah. So first, can you tell them, where are you from? What kind of procedure have you been doing, and what's the new one?
Yeah. So Mel, so I'm from Albany, New York, capital of New York and upstate. So a little bit about myself, I grew up in Utica, which is a small town in upstate New York, and went to medical school in Albany, did my internal medicine residency and my GI fellowship in Boston at Tufts Medical Center.
Okay.
And then I did an extra year of interventional endoscopy training in Albany with the practice that I'm part of now. And basically that year consisted of, more technically advanced endoscopic procedures where we go down with the endoscope and do different things. And during that year, which was in 2022 or 2023, I began to develop a passion of obesity medicine and, trying to help people lose weight. And one of the new exciting fields of interventional endoscopy is endobariatrics, specifically the endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty, or the ESG procedure, which is what we're going to be talking about today.
Yes. Which I'm very excited because I got the VSG. I got that actually yesterday was my 10-year surgeriversary.
Congratulations.
So thank you. I cannot believe it. I used to be over 308 pounds. That's the last recorded weight. We all know how that goes. And now I am still down over 120 pounds. So
that is amazing.
Thank
you. I kept it off.
That's great.
That's very hard.
I would say I've done one regain, and that was actually recently. It was in my 8th year to 9 year. And since last July, I've lost 54 pounds. So I've lost all of my regain and more.
Amazing.
It can be done, people. It can be done. And just because you regain doesn't mean you failed or it's over.
Correct.
It's just life. Life happens, right?
So you're an inspiration to a lot of people. So that's amazing to hear.
Well, thank you. So my question, first one is, how long — I didn't think I caught this in the beginning. Did you say how long you've been doing this for?
Yeah, so I've been doing this for the last 3 or 4 years, and but I've been doing endoscopy and colonoscopy since 2019. Wow, you're getting old when you got to think about how many years you've been doing something. But,
right? Yeah.
So it's been a while, and every year I learn more and more, and I get more comfortable with my skills, and it's definitely a learning curve. But that's what any craft in medicine is, right? It's just you do more, you get better at it. So
yep, 100%. So I had the VSG. What is the difference between the VSG, RNY, and the ESG?
It's a great question, Mel. So the VSG, which is what you had, the vertical sleeve gastrectomy, is a surgical procedure, right? So that's when the surgeons make incisions from the outside, and they literally cut out most of your stomach and they remove it.
Right.
And because of that, you're left with a small stomach, otherwise known as a sleeve. So that's how you felt full more easily and faster, and you felt full longer. So what's interesting about our procedure is that this is not surgery. This is all done with a thin flexible tube called an endoscope, and it's called the endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty, or otherwise the ESG procedure. So what happens with our procedure is, while you're asleep under anesthesia, we go down with this tube, and on the tip of the tube is a suturing device with a needle driver. So once we're in your stomach, we basically place between 6 to 8 sutures along what we call the gastric body, which is the majority of your stomach.
Okay.
And when each suture is cinched or tightened, your stomach kind of comes together like an accordion and shrinks as well. And after that's done, over time it scars over, and you're left with an appearance that's very, very similar to a VSG, or the surgical sleeve that you had.
Okay.
But the difference is that we haven't made any incisions. We haven't cut anything, right?
No.
So we've all done this, with the thin flexible tube. And, the recovery time is also much quicker for our procedure, because as you can imagine, it's not surgery, right? So it's a minimally invasive approach to help patients lose weight. So patients are back to work within 2 to 3 days for the most part. This is actually done as an outpatient procedure traditionally. So that means you come in for your procedure, whatever time that may be, you recover, you know, for a couple hours after that, and you go home. Because our procedure is non-surgical, the risk of complications are also much lower compared to surgery, right? Because we're not cutting anything, not removing anything. All we're doing is tightening your stomach without a single, you know, incision made.
Which is remarkable. It is wild to me to even think about, because, yeah, like the VSG, I only had 20% left of my stomach. That's it. So what I'm understanding, are you guys tightening to that point to where?
So when we're reducing, when we're, you know, tightening these sutures, and your stomach is essentially being reduced by 80%, 70 to 80% size. Okay. So you're left with a very similar appearance that a vertical sleeve would. Now, the only difference is that we spare the fundus, which is a fancy term for the top of your stomach.
Okay.
And that's because of safety reasons. You know, when we're sticking our needle into the stomach wall, the fundus is a very thin part of the stomach, and, you know, there's some increased risk of injury. So we spare that part. But I'm not sure if this ever happened to you, Mel, but patients who've had a VSG often have worsening heartburn after their surgery. What's cool about our procedure is by sparing the fundus, patients actually have improvement in their heartburn after the ESG.
So keeping
that little pocket at the top of the stomach called the fundus sort of spares them from worsening heartburn. So there's a couple of reasons why we don't mess with that area. But overall, you know, the size of the stomach is significantly reduced, very similar to the VSG.
That is interesting, because I am, thank goodness, one that doesn't have to deal with heartburn. I didn't beforehand. I don't now, but I know lots of people that do, unfortunately. So, and some of us, some of them actually have had to had a revision into an RNY because they had GERD. It was so painful. They're waking up. I didn't even know that was a thing, that like you could wake up from it, that it's so bad. So
just going back to your original question, this differs from the Roux-en-Y, of course, because the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass is totally different. That's a much more invasive surgical procedure where they remove most of your stomach and part, the first part of your small bowel called the duodenum, and they bypass it, right? So you're left with a small gastric pouch that gets attached to the jejunum, which is the rest of your small bowel. And what's cool about, you know, the suturing device that we have is that we can actually revise patients who've had a Roux-en-Y gastric bypass. And we can talk about that a little later, but, you know, with the same technique over time, you know, that outlet that people have when that gastric pouch gets attached to their, you know, jejunum, that gets dilated over time. And often, if you talk to patients who had a Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, they tell you that they start to regain weight, you know, as soon as 2 years after their surgery, because that pouch and that outlet dilates over time because of, you know, mere physics. It's not of no fault of the patient. But what we can do is we can tighten that back up, back to the original size that it was after their surgery, again, without any incisions, all done with the endoscope, which is the beauty of the procedure.
Wow. You know what it reminds me of? It sounds like a better version of the lap band.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the lap band without the lap band.
Absolutely. Without all the complications of the lap band. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. Well, my brother, when he started this journey, he did the lap band first. And yeah, it hurt. He said it was the most, the pressure was awful. The pain was awful. He hated that thing. He got it out within a year. And then he gained some more weight right after. Now, also, Dr. Patterson wanted him to just go from the lap band to a sleeve right there, but he said no, of course. And then I had to talk him into go getting the sleeve. It was kind of interesting because he's like, I'll just wait till I'm 40. It's fine. And I was like, why are you waiting? And he's like, because I could do it myself. I'm like, you are literally saying all the things that we used to say.
I know. And you know, I was just saying that, you know, a lot of patients can do it on their own, and I commend them. You know, they deserve a lot of, you know, applause and respect. But, you know, a lot of patients can't. And despite following all the rules, right, which is eating healthy, exercise, we tell our patients that all the time. But sometimes that's just not enough, right?
Yeah.
And I think we're learning more about the, you know, neurohormonal changes that contribute to obesity. And I think the stigma behind, you know, being overweight is because patients are lazy needs to go away, because that's just simply not the case for most patients, right? And I think, you know, I think with all these GLP-1s, which we can definitely talk about too, I think we're finally starting to take that stigma away and kind of welcoming obesity as a complex chronic condition that we really need to get a hold of in society today, especially in our country.
If you are looking to level up your weight loss journey like I am, let's talk about ProCare's new metabolic G3A. It's a GLP-1 companion plus your blood sugar support. This game-changing supplement is designed to support your metabolic health and your blood sugar levels, making it a perfect companion for those on a GLP-1 medication, which your girl is. Check out the metabolic G3A at procarenow.com and use code OSLP for 15% off your order. Craving a sweet treat that fits your goals? Try Built Bar. With their protein-packed bar in a variety of delicious flavors, you can satisfy your cravings while staying on track. I'm all about Team Puff. Those fluffy melt-in-your-mouth puffs are a game-changer. Head over to Built.com and use code OSLP at checkout and get 10% off your whole order. Treat yourself to something tasty and guilt-free with Built Bar. I have a delicious and nutritious way to boost your protein intake. Try American Dream Nut Butter, packed with high-quality protein and healthy fats. It's the perfect snack to fuel your weight loss journey. Whether you're adding it to your favorite meal or enjoying it straight out of the jar, like your girl does, American Dream Nut Butter is a tasty way to stay on track. Visit AmericanDreamNutButter.com and use code OSLP and get 10% off your order. Treat yourself to a healthier snack today. I'm taking my wellness to the next level with First Form because they have premium supplements to support all your health and fitness goals. Whether you're building lean muscle, boosting recovery, or improving overall health, they got you covered. Try their Level 1 Sustained Release Protein or their Formula 1 for Quick Recovery. Check out their full lineup at firstform.com/melunfiltered and take your wellness journey further today.
Especially in our country, like it's filled with just processed crap, and they actually make food, guys, to for you to be like basically almost addicted to it. They want you to go back to it. They use certain colors, they use certain sugars, they advertise all these different ways just to get your brain to like highlight, and then you go get whatever they want you to go get. So I'm on a journey of whole foods. That's where I'm on right now. I've talked Dr. Eric Smith about it, and he's a big proponent of whole foods. And I learned by me taking a GLP-1 that I do have some insulin resistance that I didn't know existed. So what have you noticed with ESG? Like, are we getting the same results? Are people loving it more? What do you think?
Yeah, great question, Mel. So the ESG procedure, we've seen that the average weight loss can be anywhere from 17% to more. You know, our patients, we've had a couple of patients that have had over 20% of total body weight loss after a year after the ESG. That's a lot of weight.
That's a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm. And more so than some of these GLP-1 medications. Now, so, you know, our procedure is very similar in the sense that patients need to follow, you know, a diet afterwards that is conducive to, you know, helping them lose weight, right? So the procedure is just one part of it. But if you talk to a lot of bariatric endoscopists like myself, the aftercare after the procedure is probably more important than the procedure itself, right?
Agreed.
I think mm-hmm. we've all heard that. And it's important to stress because, you know, patients have to do their part, of course, in terms of, you know, complying with a healthy diet, low carbohydrate, high protein, low fat, and also exercise, right? So to get the most out of that weight loss that they can get from the ESG procedure. So we're looking at like an average of 17%. You know, our clinic, we probably see more than that. And it really depends on the quality of the ESG. You know, these sutures that we place really have to be full thickness, which means that the suture has to be in the muscle layer of the stomach. And that's how you know it's going to be durable and actually effective.
Okay.
And we've seen the results of the weight loss from the ESG procedure based on studies is durable for at least 5 to 7 years, which is remarkable.
Nice. Yeah.
So, of course, no procedure has permanent results, right? We've seen that with gastric bypass. We've seen that with the vertical sleeve. And that's that holds true for the ESG. But the beauty of our procedure is that if things get stretched out again sometime in the future, we can go right back in there and put sutures again and tighten it back up, right? So, you know, it's sort of a cycle, and to really get the most out of it, you know, patients have to do their part.
They really do. I would agree 100% because I know what happens if you don't do it.
Yeah.
Because life happens, you get stressed and all the complications come through. But what I like to hear is the fact of like, hey, you can go back in though, and you can get things retightened and do your thing. And it doesn't have to be every year. It sounds like it could be every 5 to 7 years. So, which I think is really good because that's kind of where I would say like watching people through this process and then going through the process around 5 and 7, you could really fall off.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So to know that you could go back into your office and have this procedure done and you're going to be fine in a couple of days.
Yeah, that is the beauty of it. And a lot of the questions that we get asked is what's the diet like after the ESG procedure? And it's very similar to the VSG. You know, patients are on a couple of days of clear liquids, and then they get advanced to full liquids, which is protein shakes, right? Protein is everything. And that will last for a couple of weeks, and then they're on a puree diet, and then a soft diet, and then eventually solid food. And it's because, you know, it takes time for, you know, the body to get used to a smaller stomach, right? So we don't want to advance the diet too fast, otherwise they're just not going to feel well. So it's definitely a step-by-step process, and we have very close follow-up with our patients after the ESG procedure.
Good.
So they see me a week after their procedure, a month, 3, 6, 9, 12 months after, and they see the nutritionist separately during that same time frame. And walk our patients through the process of advancing their diet very carefully and are there for them every step of the way.
That's important because I will say I got one appointment back 10 years ago. We can tell like things have definitely changed for the better, but like I got one and that was it afterwards. So, and I think it was around my 6 month is when I got that one just to check on my foods and go through things. But But I feel like you need more, and I'm so happy that you're doing more. Now, what I know they're going to ask, so what kind of side effects can you have from the ESG?
Yeah, great question. So very similar things to, you know, the VSG, but less, I think, serious and complicated. So with the smaller stomach, of course, the first couple of days to the first week is probably the roughest. You know, things are healing in there. You have a much smaller stomach than you used to have. So gas pain, cramping, some nausea, that is all normal in the first couple of days. But then, you know, things start to heal and the body gets used to the smaller stomach. And usually that goes away, you know, after the first week. We tell our patients to take it easy for the first couple of days. You know, light walking, even on the first day after the procedure is very important. We want patients to be active and not be in bed all day. But really the recovery time is just so much quicker than surgery because this is so less invasive. Right. And I think that's the beauty of it. But you know, the pain scale definitely varies. Every person has a different, tolerance for what's painful. So, I've had patients that after their procedure, they feel great and they have no symptoms at all and they go home and they're just great. And I've had other patients with, you know, they got the 5 to 6 out of 10 pain and, you know, which is okay. And the other thing I want to mention is that before their procedure, I prescribe a bunch of different anti-nausea medications, you know, gas medications, anti-spasm medications to help them to take around the clock after their procedure to get ahead of that discomfort that they might have. So that's really important is making sure that they have what they need. And we're always available 24/7 on the phone if anything, you know, becomes more serious. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it sounds like it's so less invasive that like there's not a lot more extra worry. Like I know I was worried about my stomach leaking. Yeah. I was so dramatic about it to where like not dramatic. I just followed everything to the T. And in my head, I love science. So I was like, if it leaks, that means my bile's going everywhere on my organs. Yeah. What am I going to do? This is going to be crazy. I didn't have any of that problem. So that's always good.
That's good. And as an interventional gastroenterologist, you know, I've managed a lot of those complications from bariatric surgery, you know, specifically leaks. And, you know, I'm not here to say that surgery is bad anyways. No, surgery is really, really effective and it's really great. And the complication rate is still very low for surgery, you know, and you're an example of a success story from bariatric surgery, you know, and a lot of your followers. And I think it's an effective approach. Our procedure is just, you know, it's different in the sense that if patients want something more minimally invasive, you know, without being cut open, then, you know, our procedure offers that. So it's just a different approach. That's all it is.
Oh yeah. And it's nice to have different options. Because even yes, the GLP-1 works and it's doing its thing. I don't think that's still going to replace these procedures. You know, some of us need some sort of like real intervention. That's not just a shot every week. I take my shot every Tuesday. And I've had complications from that too. So it's not, sure. You know, it's not all pretty and rainbows, but you definitely have to put in the work. And that's why I'm glad that you mentioned earlier the exercise, because here's the thing I've learned over 10 years. You have to find something that you like.
Yeah.
And I know I didn't know what I liked. I just would start trying all sorts of different machines, all the different classes that my gym offered. And then by doing that, like I figured out I love rowing. Had no idea. Yep. I love doing swim aerobics and I love cycling. So like I used to just do the cycle class, walk out, and then just do a bunch of arm weights and then go home. And that was perfect for me. Like it worked. And I would do that twice a day because I loved it so much. In the first 2 years, I did two-a-days. I was just addicted to, just like seeing the results and just being present in your journey is a huge deal. I'm glad that you have another option. I wanted to talk to you too about gut health.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big proponent about gut health and I need your expertise. Like what is technically gut health? And two, why is it so important to us?
Yeah. So gut health is becoming more and more of a popular issue, I think, in gastroenterology. And there's different ways to define gut health. You know, some people define it as, you know, having healthy bowel movements, which is, you know, everyone's got a different frequency of how often they go. Another approach is, you know, making sure that people are getting the foods they need that are healthy and not processed. And another one is, you know, making sure that we have the right microbiome in our colon. You know, our colon and our small bowel consists of billions of bacteria, right? So we want to make sure that there's a healthy balance of the good bacteria and not have, you know, the bad ones take over. So it's really about, you know, I think everyone's got a different definition of it. So I tell my patients, you know, as long as you're feeling well and you're having healthy bowel movements and you're taking in unprocessed foods, which means, you know, no takeout, nothing that's been frozen for a long time, things like that, then that's good, healthy gut health, you know. And I think, and we see this a lot with patients with Roux-en-Y gastric bypass surgery, everything gets altered, right?
Yep.
Their entire microbiome is completely altered because their intestines are rerouted. So we see a lot of it in that respect. So probiotics are very helpful. I've had patients that swear by it, you know, because it kind of keeps that healthy homeostasis of the good bacteria. So I think it's a broad definition of what gut health is. And I'm also a big proponent of fiber, you know, of maintaining daily bowel movements. And, you know, we always hear about Metamucil on the radio and the commercial. And in the first couple of weeks of taking it, you know, bloating and constipation is very common. But then that two-week challenge that everyone talks about, if you stick with fiber for longer than 2 weeks, then your body gets used to that extra fiber content. And the benefits are awesome. You know, I take it myself every day.
Yeah. I mean,
that might be TMI, but whatever.
No. No TMI on this show.
Yeah. You know, drinking a lot of water with fiber, you know, healthy bowel movements, it's a stool bulking agent. People feel great on it. And also it's been shown to decrease the risk of colon cancer, which is definitely a plus, and also cholesterol. Mm-hmm. So I think everyone's got a different approach, but it all depends on what works for you.
Well, yeah. And we know just from like, watching the news and doing the things is that like men are more susceptible to colon cancer. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen an uptick of colon cancer in younger people, which is alarming. So we used to screen at 50 years old, but now, and you may have heard this, now we screen at 45 for your average risk patient. So, and that's just because we've gotten a lot more attention to younger people being diagnosed with colon cancer. You know,
yeah.
We have, you know, recent celebrities that were diagnosed with colon cancer at a younger age that are, you know, bringing attention to this whole issue. And a lot of patients ask me why, and I don't think we exactly know why. I think my hypothesis, and again, I can't prove this, but I think it's because of the way that we've processed foods over the last 34 years, because not a lot else has changed, right? And I think that's got to be pro-inflammatory in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, and my guess is that at some point it's probably going to be 40 instead of 45, but we'll see what happens. So, you know, for those people out there, you know, get your colonoscopy if you're old enough, because that is, it's such a easy way to prevent colon cancer when we find polyps and we take them out, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it breaks my heart when I'm doing colonoscopy on someone who's relatively young and I find some cancer or a mass, and I know that that could have been prevented, right? If that was caught earlier. So, definitely alarming. And, you know, rectal bleeding, if that happens, that's always a red flag symptom, right? So always talk to your doctor about that if that's happening. But yeah, it's definitely on the uptick. There's no doubt.
Well, yeah, I've been watching that. I even have a friend that actually turned 40 and he went anyway. He was like, I'm going. Yeah. Yeah. Don't even care. And my ex-husband at the time, like, he's like a couple years older than him, and he's like, really? He goes, no, dude, you need to go. Like, he's like, you need to just do this. He's like, it's just killing more and more men. And I think you're right. I think it's all the processed food. I think it's how we, one, get our food, how we eat our food, how it's all of it. Packaging, delivering. It's insane what goes into just one item to make sure it can actually last until you get it to your house. I think there's still a big disconnect between farm to house. Like, what does that actually look like? What, because I watch a lot of documentaries, and that's the only reason why I know this stuff, guys, because it really interests me. I want to know, like, because I had chickens. So it's like, all right, let's see, like, how does this all work? And I could even tell just in my eggs that they're so different from the store. They taste different, look different. They, when you crack them open, they're like a different color. So it's like, that just right there shows you that they're that things are changing. And I remember when I was a kid, they were a big deal about the hormones in the milk. Was changing women's cycles and making them go earlier. So it really is about what you guys consume.
And the colonoscopy that we do, you know, it's a very low risk procedure. The worst part is prepping for it, right? You probably heard that from people. It's just a pretty shitty couple of days before the procedure, you know, because you gotta really take the laxatives and really just clean out. But after that, it's you're taking a nap and you're getting your colonoscopy, you know. So I think it's something to definitely talk to your doctor about if you're eligible and you qualify, for sure.
I have a great protein company for you that is both delicious and effective. That is Devotion Nutrition. With their amazing proteins, you will find mouthwatering flavors and high quality ingredients that support your goals. You can bake with this, you can make your post-workout shake, and prepare a protein pack snack. Devotion really does have you covered. So go over to devotion.com and use code OSLP5 at checkout to get 5% off your order. Fuel your body with the best Devotion Nutrition ingredients today. Since I started my weight loss journey, I have been more positive and more intent with what I'm doing with my life. And that includes what I'm wearing. I found this new company called Find the Good Brand. Their collection of motivational apparel and accessory is designed to help you stay focused on the positive while making a bold statement. From inspiring shirts to empowering hats, you got it covered. Visit findthegoodbrand.com and use code MELUNFILTER at checkout to get 10% off your order. Start spreading those good vibes today with Find the Good Brand. I'm on my own weight loss journey, and eventually I'm going to be going down the plastic surgery side. So join me with Pop Recovery Community. They are the best place to get your personalized support, expert advice, and there's a group of like-minded individuals that are just like you. Pop Recovery is your go-to for sustainable wellness. Whether you are focusing on nutrition, fitness, or mental wellness, Pop Recovery has all the tools that you need. So go over to poprecoverysystems.com and use code OSLPTA and check out to get $5 off your subscription. Start thriving with me and Pop Recovery Community today. Well,
thank you for suggesting that too, because we have men that listen to the show, and I want you guys to be safe just as much as anybody else. Like even women should get it checked, right? Like, it's not just men.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So ladies, get your booties checked too.
Exactly. Talk to your doctor.
Talk to your doctor. It's communication is huge for our doctors. They, again, I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. They only are as knowledgeable as at the information you're giving them. So
yep.
Don't lie to your doctors. Tell them what's going on with your body. My question about gut health, though, now, how can you tell that you're just not, that your guts probably has some issues? Like something's going on.
Yeah. So, common symptoms that people have, you know, that warrants more of a workup about their gut is, you know, abdominal pain is probably the easy one, right? So mm-hmm. How many times have we eaten something and we get pain afterwards, you know, yeah. Like right in the middle of your belly, right? You know, right underneath your chest or right upper quadrant pain where you're, right where your gallbladder is or your liver is. So pain anywhere in your belly, whether it's related to food or not, really kind of warrants a workup and an evaluation of your gut health, right?
Okay.
And that's one thing is pain, and that goes along with nausea as well. And the other thing is your bowel movements, right? Diarrhea, right? Mm-hmm. If you're having a lot of diarrhea, that warrants a workup, whether that's stool test, labs, imaging, colonoscopy, right? And then also, I know this sounds gross, but what do your bowel movements look like? Is it watery? Mm-hmm. Is it floating? Is it greasy? Are there oil droplets in it, right? That can signify something with your pancreas, right?
Maybe okay.
Your pancreas isn't functioning correctly. Is there blood, right? That's one of those red flag symptoms that we talked about. So I think, you know, belly pain, nausea, mm-hmm. changes in your bowel habits, constipation, right? A lot of people struggle from constipation. So all these different symptoms could definitely be indicative of something going on with the gut health. And weight loss, let's not forget about that. Weight loss mm-hmm. that's not intentional, all right? So when
yeah.
people are not absorbing the nutrients they need from their food, they can lose weight. And that's something that also warrants a workup of the gut health, right? So I think all those symptoms kind of go together and to be watchful for.
That, yes, those are a lot of different ones that you should be monitoring. Especially I wanted to talk about the pooping part. We're just going to yeah. talk about it real quick. Because I hear men all the time being like, oh, that was a bad one, or that's watery, or like, and they say that this happens all the time.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm concerned, but they just seem totally fine with it. And I'm like, but what sure. what should like a friend or family member say to someone? Because you're just like, that can't be good.
Yeah. So everyone's different, you know, and there's such a wide spectrum of what's a normal bowel movement and how often people should go. You know, I have patients that go once every 2 or 3 days, and that's normal for them. They've never gone more frequently than that. And that's just they feel fine. And that's totally okay. So I think it all depends on the person. You know, if there are any red flag symptoms like bleeding, mm-hmm. if there's a lot of watery diarrhea, if there's weight loss, you know, those are reasons to warrant a colonoscopy for further workup. But, you know, if you don't have any of those things and things are kind of the way it always has been, then it's okay. But I think whenever there's any kind of alterations in your bowel habits, it's always good to talk to your doctor because there's questions that he or she will ask that you may not be thinking of that mm-hmm. may warrant a workup, you know? So, you know, bowel movements vary. Everyone's got a different mm-hmm. regimen, whether it's in the morning, in the evening, you know, it's all different. So I think you just gotta, talk to your doctor and see what warrants a workup.
Well, and go to your doctors, guys. I know Absolutely. A lot of people that just like, oh, I'm fine. So,
yeah.
You know, and I've right. fallen into that category too. I'm not going to be like, I'm a great over here. Like I miss my appointments, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. How are you on your appointments?
I just had my first PCP appointment in probably 7 years. And
Ooh!
So you'll hear doctors make the worst patients, and it's absolutely true. At least I think so. My yeah. dad's a physician. He's hasn't seen a doctor forever. We finally got him to go, and like all these problems popped up, and we're like, all right, well, we should have dealt with this before, you know? So I think, you know, I'm guilty of it too, and I get it. Life's busy, right?
Yeah.
We have a million and one things going on. A lot of us don't seek help until it becomes serious or the problem is not going away, and that's not good. You know, we got to find things before they turn into something, and if you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of other people, right? Whether it's your family or your friends or whatever it may be. So definitely go to your doctor. That's very important.
Thank you for being honest with that one too. Like, I just want people to see, like, no one's perfect. Just make sure you go is the biggest deal here that we're trying to stress. Now, You want to, let's talk a little bit about GLP-1s. What are your thoughts on them? How do you feel about them? Do you prescribe them? I don't know if you even can or not. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm triple board certified. So I have my obesity. I got obesity certified. This was part of the year that I really became fascinated with obesity. And I'm really glad I did that because I was able to learn a lot about how obesity evolves and the new advances in it. And so the GLP-1s, and we all know about them, right? Wegovy, Zepbound, Ozempic, they're really effective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when these GLP-1s came out, I was like, okay, well, no one's going to get bariatric surgery anymore. Nobody's going to get these endoscopic sleeves anymore. But, you know, I was wrong because there's a place for all of these things in society. So the way these GLP-1s works, and as you already know with this, Mel, and most of the followers know this too, that it works on your stomach by decreasing the emptying speed of your stomach, right? So it slows things down. It also works on your brain in that it decreases your appetite, right? So because of those two things, people often lose weight. So I think they're great, and we don't dismiss the GLP-1s. We actually start GLP-1s 3 to 4 months after their ESG procedure, after they start plateauing from their weight loss. Mm-hmm. And that happens about, you know, it can happen anywhere from 3 to 6 months. It might take a little longer. But when they start plateauing, that's a good time to introduce the GLP-1. And then when you combine ESG and GLP-1s, studies have shown that you're getting surgical-like results.
Yeah.
In terms of the weight loss, you know, which is awesome. And that's not having had surgery or one incision made. So we think it's great. And we, you know, welcome combination approach, which is that. Now, our procedures, you know, to play devil's advocate, GLP-1s can bring a lot of problems for patients, right?
Yep.
And, mm-hmm. and we talked a little bit about this, and I got some patients that really can't tolerate them, you know, mm-hmm. even at the lowest dose, they develop nausea, abdominal pain, diarrhea, or even constipation. I've had some bad cases of pancreatitis from GLP-1s. And so when that happens, that's another opportunity of why our procedure may be helpful, mm-hmm. right? Because it's a minimally invasive approach and gives them the same amount of weight loss or even more than they would have had with GLP-1, but not undergo all the side effects that they would have had. GLP-1s are really hard to come by, right? Mm-hmm. And we have compound pharmacies out there, you know, trying to increase access. We have insurance companies not covering them. And so that limits the GLP-1s as well, which is unfortunate because they do have a lot of benefits for patients. And we have patients that don't want to take something every single week for the rest of their life.
Yes. Right?
That scares a lot of people. And I mm-hmm. totally understand that because we, again, don't really have a lot of long-term data on it. So that mm-hmm. is a concern for me. So I have patients coming to me who want an ESG procedure because they are not comfortable with a GLP-1, and that's okay, you know? And
yep.
So I guess to summarize, sorry, I kind of went off on a tangent there, but
no, do it. I love it.
I guess to summarize, my answer is that, you know, we welcome the GLP. We think the GLP-1 is very effective, and we usually introduce it after patients have plateaued from their weight loss after the ESG. We don't do both at once because they're just not going to feel well, right? We can't do both things at once. So we do one thing, and I have patients that come to me on a GLP-1, but they are just not losing as much weight as they want. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we have them stop it for a month or two, and then we do our procedure. So it kind of washes out of their system so that they can tolerate our procedure. And then we just reintroduce it back, you know, 3 to 4 months later or whatever time frame that be. So, so we use both methods for sure.
Well, and I think that's I love that combination. Like, that's the deal. I think because of ESG, VSG, R and Y, you get taught habits. You get taught certain things so that way you can have longevity with it. And that's the only reason why I was skeptical for a while with the GLP-1s is, one, there's not a lot of data, which bothers me. Two, and it's forever, and like technically you need to use it forever. So that's another thing that concerned me. And then I was like, I talked to another doctor and I was like, you mean I can't just use it in cycles? And they're like, no.
Yeah, unfortunately. We work that way. Yeah.
Right? I was like, 6 months on, 6 months off? No.
Yeah. They've actually found that, you know, when you discontinue a GLP-1, there's something called rebound hunger, actually, where patients actually get more hungry than they were even before they even started the medication, you know, and that definitely contributes to weight regain. So it is something that, you know, you have to take indefinitely to be able to sustain the effects in terms of the weight loss from the GLP-1. So.
When it's always versus like quantity versus quality, right? So it's like, I would rather have quality life than just lose a bunch of weight real quick. Like,
absolutely.
That's not my goal. I want to be able to like this for as much as I can. So,
And, you know, for patients who've had a vertical sleeve gastrectomy like you, you know, what we can do is do a mini ESG for them if they start to regain weight, which is basically where we go in there and we just place maybe not 6 to 8 sutures because the stomach is probably already smaller, right, from your gastric sleeve, but we place maybe 2 or 3 and we make small again, similar to the size it was after your original surgery, because believe it or not, the stomach stretches even after a gastric sleeve, by food being in there. So again, a lot of cool things we can do with the endoscope in GI. So
that is really cool to know. Like, so even if you've had a VSG, you can still help them. What Absolutely. About an RNY or a Sadie?
Yeah. So for the RNY, you know, that outlet, which is the connection between the small gastric pouch and the small bowel, that gets stretched out over time, and patients start to regain weight. So we place a suture or two in there, and we bring it back down to a smaller size. And then we may place a stitch or two in the gastric pouch, which usually gets stretched out as well. And patients will feel, they'll tell you, they feel just like they did after their gastric bypass, however many years ago that was, you know, and that's all done with the camera, which is cool. So those are two bariatric surgeries that we can revise, is the vertical sleeve or VSG and then the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass.
Very cool, because that will help tons of people that have, you know, the heartburn that you talked about earlier, or that regain that can and sometimes does happen. Just know that it's normal, guys. I can't stress that enough, that it is normal to regain. And I was really mean to myself after the year 2.5 to 3, because I gained that normal like 10-15 bump.
And then
I sat there though for 3-4 years. So it does happen, and your body likes to be at certain spots, and that's okay. So don't be mean to yourself like I was. I beat myself up over it. It's not fun. I do have therapy. I do journal now, and it's a lot better. Do you offer any mental health stuff for your patients?
Yeah, great question. So we have a behavioral specialist that we work with, and basically before the procedure, whatever that may be, the revision or the ESG, we have patients, you know, just have a consultation with that behavioral specialist. You know, to go over eating habits, go over their, you know, mental health analysis, you know, make sure that patients are mentally fit to undergo a weight loss procedure. And all bariatric surgeons do this too before their bariatric surgery, you know, because life's hard. There's a lot of barriers to losing weight, and we need to sort of dissect that a little bit and just understand that before we put them under and do a procedure. So, you know, and then they're available for these patients after their procedure as well. A lot of the nutritionists can kind of handle that, but we have dedicated behavioral specialists that we work with that can help with kind of modifying some of those addictive behaviors that, you know, many of us have when it comes to eating. And so it's important. It's weight loss, in my head, is a very multidisciplinary approach, right? It's not just a doctor. No way. Like, I'm part of a team. Like, I couldn't do my job without my nurses, my techs, my anesthesia, my nutritionist, my behavioral specialist. I'm just one piece of the puzzle. And I think, you know, that also needs to resonate with the patient and know that they have all these people that are there for them to help them on their weight loss journey, right? And it takes a village, really, and that's what we're here for.
Well, and that's why when people say, like, I'm going to do it on my own, that makes me nervous, because you have a team. Like, we need a team around us, or people that are willing to help. And that's why we have doctors and physicians to help us, nutritionists, dietitians. And that's one of the reasons why I have you guys on the show too, is to show, like, hey, these people are here, they do exist, and you need to have multiple. Yeah. And hey, and I always like to do the analogy of, like, hey, a football player has this whole team around him, right? Like, he has all these different types of people that are helping them with, like, their throwing, their running, their health, their longevity, like the whole thing. So it's like,
definitely.
We are not any different than that. They just are glamorized more. We still need a team to help us. Yeah. So. Well, I wanted to ask you some questions I got.
Sure.
Because, of course, I got to pull my benchies. So for those that don't know what a benchie is, I have patrons and on patreon.com/OSLP. And we have almost 200 patrons in there. And we have a whole support group just for those that need help, and men and women. So I asked them, hey, I'm going to have an ESG person on. What's your question? Mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So let me pull up some of theirs because some of them were really good.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And some of them are kind of fun. So let's sure. see. Of course. Okay, so here's a fun one.
Yeah.
What is the weirdest thing you've ever found in a colonoscopy?
Probably not appropriate for this show, but let's talk about the PG things that I found.
Okay.
Found batteries before. that's been done.
Oh boy.
Let's see. A pen.
Just a regular old pen.
I would probably say, yeah, you know, just casually found a pen, you know. Obviously we knew we were going after it when we went in there. It wasn't like a surprise during a screening colonoscopy or anything like that, you know. So and you know, we find things in the stomach, and that's a procedure, you know, we do the endoscopy to remove foreign bodies. So it happens. But it's all part of the job.
Right? Yep. Okay. So is there really a such thing as perfect poop?
No. I think everyone's poop is special in their own way.
Just like us.
Exactly. We don't let anyone tell you differently about your poop. You know, we don't discriminate. We welcome all types of poop. I think, there's really no perfect poop, right? And yeah. I think everyone's got their own description of what makes them feel great after a poop. And I think it's all subjective. It really is, you know? So, but again, looking out for those things that are not normal, like constant watery diarrhea or bleeding, that is not normal.
Not normal, guys.
But yeah, no perfect poop. It's all subjective.
So this one's about stress. So sure. Can stress actually mess up your gut health?
Absolutely. So there is definitely a mind-gut relationship. And IBS is kind of one of those examples. You know,
okay.
When patients have IBS or irritable bowel syndrome, which, you know, a lot of people have heard of, they often will tell you that when they are stressed out or they have a lot of, you know, things going on in their life that's causing them stress or whatever it may be, their GI symptoms get worse. That's a very common thing we hear, you know, whether it's constipation or diarrhea or even abdominal pain. So there is this mind-gut relationship that we've really discovered over the last, you know, 20, 30 years. And that's why we tell patients to do whatever they can, you know, easier said than done, of course. Try to minimize the stress in your life because your GI symptoms may quiet down as well. You know, we often prescribe a medication called amitriptyline, which is basically it's a type of antidepressant for irritable bowel syndrome when patients have a lot of gnawing abdominal pain at a really low dose because it's been shown to be effective. So that's how closely we know that there's a relationship where we're actually prescribing these things. And it's part of the guidelines to help people. So absolutely, stress can definitely impact. And I don't know about you, but whenever I had a big test or a big exam back in med school, you know, I was in the bathroom every morning, you know, like with loose stool, right? TMI again. I'm so sorry. You're probably never going to have me back, but that's okay.
Oh,
but,
I will.
It was a thing that happened to me, and it was clearly related to stress, right? So, it's definitely a huge impact on our GI system.
See, for me, it's the opposite side. So, I get when I'm stressed out, I get my stomach starts hurting, and I get nauseous, and then like sometimes I puke or I don't puke. So,
yeah,
I go the other way.
Yeah, on that one. And that's okay. That
happens, right? Like that's totally normal to whether it's poop or vomit. It's just stress does it.
Stress does it. I know. So stress, I feel like there's so much about stress that we are just learning about, you know. It's so important. Also sleep. Like sleep is really, really important. Sleep and not being stressed out. And life doesn't work that way because that stuff, you know, it's hard to maintain a healthy lifestyle, but it's important because it affects every organ system really. So yeah.
I believe it. Can you go into a little bit more about sleep?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the GI system, I don't know if there's a lot of data to support it, but we know that, you know, not sleeping enough is definitely related to cardiovascular disease. Also, it's been related to increasing your cancer risk because there's just more opportunity for inflammation to develop. So, you know, we always talk about 6 to 8 hours, and I think it's really important to try to stick to that. Some people say they can function on 4 to 5 hours of sleep. That's maybe true, but I don't think people really understand the effects that has on the body, you know, and until later. And I think Sleep is an opportunity for your body to sort of restore and kind of reset and heal. In terms of any inflammation that may be happening, things like that. And I don't know about you, but when I'm not getting enough sleep, like I get sick really easily. You know, I catch colds, I catch a cough or sore throat. So that's how I know that sleeping, you know, keeps my immune system at bay, right? So yeah. I think it's just a healthy habit. And again, easier said than done because life is hard. And, you know, I just had a baby a couple months ago. So that's, you know, I've been struggling with sleep a little bit, but my wife has been, you know, holding the fort down. But it's tough, right?
It's tough.
So life happens and we have circumstances, but you just got to do your best.
Oh, yeah. And one, congratulations.
Thank you. That's exciting.
Especially in the beginning of that, like, yeah, you and your wife aren't going to get the best sleep, but right. It comes in time, guys. Believe it or not, I have a 19-year-old. I had him at 19. I remember those days and it was hard. It's just, it is what it is, man. And anybody that has twins or triplets, oh my God.
I know.
Power to you people, because that's just wild. But when it comes to sleep, I will agree with you too, is when I sleep well, I'm barely sick.
Yeah.
I'm barely sick. And then once I have, and this actually happened in December, and I blame it on a few things. One, traveling. I traveled to St. Louis.
Yeah.
Lack of sleep, for sure. I wasn't getting my protein in like I normally do. You know, like everything was off. And then I come home and whatever that newest virus was, like, it was awful. Like, it was insane. I was in my house for 13 days. I didn't leave.
Oh, boy.
Because of how bad it was. Like, I have never puked that many times in a day before until this last December. And it was just nuts. But that's how you know, like, hey, stress, sleep, and lack of protein.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It goes out the window. And then now your body's like, hey, Buster, you took away my shield. So I'm kind of screwed over here.
No, it's and the other thing is, you know, not looking at your phone at night when you're in bed, and I'm guilty of it too. You know, we all do that, or screen time. Minimizing that really will help sleep hygiene for sure. So,
I tell that to people too, and they like just give me that look, and I'm like, hey, man, I'm just trying to do that right now. Like,
right.
I know that it works because I typically. That's what I do now. Is I have a sound machine. This is how serious I am about my sleep, y'all. I literally give myself basically a sound bath every night
because
I do brown noise. I put it on my JBL speaker so it's loud, and I have it on. And literally, Kel used to tell me all the time that like if she turned it off, she's like, "You wake up immediately." And I was like, "Yep."
Yeah, yeah. I got a fan on high, not for the air, but because of the white noise. You know, so it's you got to do whatever works for you.
Yeah, and it's okay to have that. Like, people are like, isn't that kind of weird? And I was like, it's just me in my room. Like, I don't give two shits. Yeah,
right. Exactly right.
Like, if I need to put red lights up, and if I need to do a sound or put my phone away 30 minutes earlier, that's affecting me, and that's what makes me sleep better. So, guys, do whatever you need to do to sleep better.
Yeah,
it is totally fine. Okay, so here's some more questions.
Yeah,
do you ever eat before? This is an interesting, I think this is for you. Mm-hmm. Before you go do a procedure, do you ever eat before you go in, or is that hard for you to do?
That's a really interesting question. Never been asked that before. I'll tell you about my routine every day. I wake up, I have a coffee, right? So I have a coffee, I sip it throughout the morning into the afternoon. I have some hard boiled eggs that I eat around 11 or 12. And that's all I need. I don't get hungry actually until dinner time, you know? So my coffee and my eggs is really all I need. So, if I'm feeling a little peckish, you know, I have a protein bar that I keep with me that I will have before a procedure. Especially if I know it's going to be a long one, right? So ESG procedures can take anywhere from an hour and a half to 2.5 hours. So, you know, I definitely make sure I'm well nourished before that. So I'm not a big breakfast eater. So it's really coffee, eggs, at some point in the early afternoon or late morning, and then a protein bar in between if I need it. And then I, I definitely indulge in my dinner. Like, I just eat everything that's on the table because I'm just so hungry. But
you're so hungry, yeah.
At the end of the day, it's really, I think it's just the adrenaline and of the day of just going, you know, yeah, you know, through procedures and seeing patients that just keeps me not really that hungry. So
you're just distracted.
Yeah.
It does sound like you need a little more protein, sir.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. I'm guilty of that.
I love it. What is the number one food that makes your GI kind of cry, basically? What's like the main food that kind of hurts people?
You know, that answer is different for every patient. You know, I have patients who anytime they eat broccoli, it's game over. You know, it's just like diarrhea, belly pain, nausea, right? I have actually a handful of patients with that. I have patients, spicy foods is kind of the obvious answer. That's a very common thing that people say, you know, will increase their heartburn and acid and belly pain and things like that and their bowel movements. So spicy foods, I hear broccoli a lot. You know, of course, people who are lactose intolerant, then dairy products, right? That's going to be really impactful.
Ooh, I have a question about that.
Yeah.
My kid is lactose intolerant. So, but, you know, again, he's 19. I give him the lactate. He does what he wants to do.
Sure.
But it is not good for your stomach and all the things for you to be eating that stuff, right? Like, it's just inflaming it. Like, what is it doing?
The lactose containing stuff, or if you're lactose intolerant, you mean?
Yeah, when you're lactose intolerant, and because he'll still have ice cream every once in a while, and well, he's like, I know I'm going to be in the bathroom in an hour, but I do it anyway, and I'm just like, that can't be good.
I mean, it's all about, you know, if you're able to roll with the hits, right? So if you're going to be like, okay, I mean, you know, if you're lactose intolerant, and you're eating lactose containing foods, and you're pooping all day, and you're having diarrhea, that's kind of the ramifications of it. So it's really about what you can tolerate. Is the amazing tasting cheese on your pizza or whatever that lactose, is it really worth it? And that's, everyone's got a different answer for that, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it really depends on the person. So
what is it doing though to your body to make it do that? Like, is just inflaming things? Is it?
No, it's just not really, you don't really have the enzymes or the proper tools in your body to sort of digest, you know, the lactose or what the sugar compromised molecules to break it down essentially. So it's basically just going through your system and you're not really breaking it down to be absorbed. So that's pretty much it.
That's what's happening. I see.
You're not able to digest it and break it down. So that's why people have diarrhea with you know, lactose containing foods if they're lactose intolerant. And people can develop it actually later in life. There could be sort of an adult onset of lactose intolerance where you kind of develop it later and not just from being not as a child. So everyone's different. But
that's good to know, because legit, like, after surgery is when I got a little, I just noticed more of I can't handle a lot of a lot of cheeses or lots of dairy anymore. Yeah. I still have my gallbladder, still got her in there, but still, great. Like, it's definitely something I noticed after surgery. That was a big change.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of patients after bariatric surgery where their bowel habits completely change, even after a vertical sleeve, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think it's anytime we, like, you know, alter the GI system in some way, you can have ramifications of that. So, yeah, it's possible.
So the last question I have for you is, what are some of the good things that we can put in our bodies that really help the gut health? Besides just, we all know probiotics, but like, what kind of foods, you know, if you're on a whole food or a vegan or whatever, what can we do?
Definitely. So I think it's what we've seen in terms of healthy weight and cardiovascular benefits is the Mediterranean diet. That's been shown in studies to really be probably the most beneficial diet out there is the Mediterranean diet. And, you know, and it's always fresh foods, right? So nothing processed, things that haven't been on the shelf. My wife always tells me, you know, if something, you know, doesn't have a shelf life and you can eat this like 3 months later, like, that's how you know that it's probably not fresh and it's probably consists of some processed things, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important, are things that are fresh and are not mixed with chemicals. And I think maintaining a low carbohydrate diet, you know, bread is really great in moderation. But when you have a lot of bread, like, that's a lot of carbohydrates and that can be pro-inflammatory. So I think maintaining, and also protein, high protein, That's really important as well. So I always tell my patients, you know, high protein, low fat, low carbohydrate if you can. Follow the Mediterranean diet. It's easier said than done, but right. You know, just staying away from processed foods. That's really the name of the game, I think.
That, I mean, it makes sense. Like before we had all this processed food, I think a lot of our gut health was fine because we were eating straight from the garden, you know, going down to your local markets and getting fresh foods. And I love it when the Saturday markets open up because then you're like, yes, well, I can get fresh stuff every week and don't have to worry about it. So like I know in Oregon, like I think ours just started again. So because it rains a lot here. So we have to wait until it's good time to go. But I know I'm pretty excited about that. Is there what is like a good tip that you can give our listeners going forward?
Yeah, I think I would say have some short term goals. You know, I think people always come to me and they say, I want to lose 100 pounds. I want to lose 80 pounds by next year or whatever it is. But, you know, that's a lot of pressure on yourself, right? To basically say that you want to lose all that weight. And, you know, if you do, that's awesome. And I encourage people to get to reach their weight loss goals. But I think kind of looking shorter in the distance will help people achieve those goals a little bit better. So, you know, maybe saying, I want to lose 5 pounds by next month or the month after, you know, and then that makes it a little bit more less scary, I think, in people's minds. And so I think, you know, doing that is really helpful. And I think being physically active, whatever they may be, you know, take the stairs instead of taking the elevator, like any bit helps, especially from people who work from home, which is a lot of our population. You know, if you have lunch break, you know, take 10 minutes and go for a walk outside, especially as it's getting warmer out in the Northeast, at least, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it's creating short-term goals, not being too hard on yourself, and just taking every opportunity to be physically active when you can. You know, I think that is probably what I would tell my patients because it's hard. Losing weight is really hard. And, you know, I sympathize with everybody who struggles. And I think there needs to be more compassion, I think, for people trying to lose weight. And I think that's where we can improve, even from a provider standpoint, from physicians as well. I think we need to be a little more understanding of people's limitations and their challenges to reaching their weight loss goals. So I think being considerate and compassionate is important.
I think we need a lot of that. I appreciate you for coming on the pod and giving me all this information. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so we're based out of Albany. I'm part of a practice called Albany Gastroenterology Consultants. And the brand, the division that I created for our bariatric procedures is called Forward Wellness. That's the number four. WARD Wellness, and I have my own website, forwardwellness.com. And the number to call to make an appointment would be 518-533-5005. And, you know, for patients who are from around the country, you know, we can do televisits if you're interested in the ESG procedure and see you remotely and then schedule something and then coming in for your procedure. So it's not, you don't have to be in Albany to see me and get your procedure done. You know, I can do televisits and I think that gives people a lot of flexibility. So love to have a consult with you if you're interested.
That's amazing, guys. I didn't know that part. So super awesome. I'm going to have everything linked below. So that way we have the website, the phone number, where to find him. Because if you're like me, 10 years ago, I was very scared to do the RNY because I thought it was very invasive. That's why I went with a VSG. And now there's an ESG where you don't even get opened up. Like,
that's right.
This is so cool. I think I might have gone with that one because I was so scared.
Yeah.
Back then.
It's a great thing. Very excited about it.
So thank you again, guys. And everybody, while you're listening, go check him out. Remember to follow us on YouTube. It's on your phone. Just hit that little bell. Hit the subscribe button. It means way more to me than it does to you. But you do get these videos every single Tuesday. And just know his is going to be out soon. Well, it's going to be out when you see this. So I don't know why I even said that. Don't even worry about it.
Thank you for having me. Great opportunity. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And thank you guys for listening. And until next time. Have a good day.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of Our Sleep Life Podcast. Don't forget to head over to my YouTube channel, hit the subscribe button, and follow me on all the socials so you stay connected. And remember, until next time, keep shining bright.